Hey everyone, it's Adrian here. This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Brewery Tours. Christmas is coming up, so please consider buying a Dave's Brewery Tour for a friend or a family member. They might really enjoy the great tours that Dave's puts on. The following episode is a couple of interviews that I did when I was in Adelaide recently with Little Bang Brewing Co. and the Weedy Brewing Co.'s. So, hope you enjoy.
Sessionable.
All right, I'm here with Ryan from Little Bang Brewing Company in Adelaide. Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty well. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Just getting stuck into it for another Friday. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's get right into it. Let our audience know what Little Bang is all about.
Well, Phil and I both used to work in the video games industry, and we were brewing together and, you know, just as hobbyists, because one thing, working in video games will give you is a healthy appreciation for alcohol. And, being nerds, we like to do things ourselves. I like to make pickles and kimchi and cheese and stuff like that at home. And, you know, Phil makes olives and, pickled eggs, all sorts. And homebrew is just another extension of that sort of do-it-yourself thing. And we'd geek out about it a lot and constantly be researching stuff and comparing notes. And as it happened when the GFC hit, the Australian games industry really tanked and we both lost our jobs at the same time in 2009. And Phil took a year off to renovate his house and while his missus was working. And I started working at my local pub. And I think, sort of unbeknownst to us, I think the homebrewing thing kind of influenced the direction we went after that. I was just hassling the pub that I was working for, which is just a little, you know, not country town, but it was a hills out of the way sort of little bottle shop. I just started hassling him to get decent beer because I just wasn't happy with it. Here's Phil now.
Yay.
How you doing?
Good.
But yeah, anyway, I just I started hassling them to get some bloody decent beer in, and they finally said, you know what, you run the beer, just shut up about it. And so I started ordering beer for the pub. Through that, I met some craft beer suppliers and distributors, and through that, I ended up being the first sales rep for Palais Imports, who was doing Brooklyn beers, and they were and Hitachino Nest, a lot of good Canadian stuff. And also agent for Phoenix Beers at the time as well, so Sierra Nevada, Weinstefan, all sorts. I ended up with about 400 beers in my catalogue, and I became like the sort of craft beer guy around town in Adelaide. Meanwhile, Phil decided to get himself a trade as a refrigeration mechanic, also probably with no small influence from homebrewing. And a couple of years later, I think, we were brewing together, and Phil's homebrew rig was just fucking amazing. I'm sorry, we're allowed to swear on this now.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
It was fucking sick. So we just brewed at Phil's place all the time because being a fridgie, he had the skills to make just an incredible rig. And it got to the point where we were hitting the homebrews one day and I was just saying to Phil, this stuff's better than half the fancy crap I'm selling out there for top dollar. It was almost like we owe it to ourselves to give it a try. So Phil said, well, shit, I can build a brewery right here in the garage. So we scrounged and begged, borrowed and stole, and didn't steal anything, surely. No, nothing. After about a year's worth of Sundays, we had a brewery. And after about 6 months worth of forms and approvals and stuff, we were able to sell beer. And then pretty much since then, we haven't been able to make enough. And now we moved about a year ago to a warehouse here in Stepney. And people have been showing up every weekend to drink beer here. So now it's even more like a venue than a wholesale operation, which is just another step in the evolution. So we're just trying to chase this thing down the tracks, really, and see where it leads us.
Awesome. I saw a photo of your small brewery garage that you started with, and now you're in this still fairly small facility over in Stepney. Have you found the change in venue, and where do you see the space going in the future?
Well, Phil can probably answer that one.
Where the space is going in the future. Well, it was too small.
We've got more room to lose shit in now, I know that.
Yeah. So with most spaces, you end up just taking up whatever you're given. So if we had 2,000 square metres, it'd probably be just as big a pigsty as it is at the moment. So we did outgrow this space fairly quickly, which we kind of knew would happen, but We're going to maximise it by installing a mezzanine for dry goods storage, and we've got a couple more fermenters coming in, and then probably down the track next year we probably might add two more. That'd probably be this space maxed out.
Then we stop. Then we die.
Yeah. So, yeah, and from that point on, we don't really know where we'll go after that. A year ago,
how the fuck will we know what we've been now? I don't even bother thinking more than 6 months down.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a whole new ball game anyway.
It might change again. Yeah, pretty much.
Just react to whatever the hell's right in front of you and see where you go.
So I think kind of general plans are we'll probably do any package production off-site and use people who have spent megabucks on their canning or bottling facilities so we don't have to spend those megabucks. And do kegs and retail out of here, and that should probably keep us ticking. There's a few other things.
We don't really want to go, you know, we've spoken to a few guys who just, they've got this sort of infinite growth plan, which is the way that business sort of pushes you, just go and go and go. I think we're of an opinion that if you're big enough to be comfortable and have a good time, then, you know, why would you? Yeah. Like, at the moment, we're probably still teetering on that, just big enough to maybe make a living on, but if something goes pear-shaped, we're in a lot of trouble. So
yeah, cool.
Once we're a little bit bigger, I think we might get comfy enough to just go, right, this is us. Because the minute you're doing that really big volume, you have to respond to bigger market forces, which may push us in directions that we wouldn't want to go quality-wise.
Yeah.
So I've seen the cans of Galactopus popping around in town. Where are you guys brewing that, or where are you guys canning that?
Yeah, so that's been brewed at Wollunga Brewery, which is the home of Fox Hat and Vale Ale. We're really good mates with those guys, so we just cruise down there one day, spent a day there brewing the beer. It's still our original recipe, just using their equipment, fermented it down there, and then used the canning line to can it, then dragged all the cans back here, losing a few on the road on the way.
Yeah, and most of the cans made it back.
Yeah. And then labelled it here because we're doing such a small run it wasn't worth printing. So we're hoping to keep that relationship going with the boys down at Wollunga.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
They
know far more about what they're doing than we do.
Yeah.
Really feel very safe when we're there.
Yeah, they're just cowboy enough.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think, yeah, you see some places that are all digital and all automated, and it's like, it's very impressive. But really, if you're just standing in one place, pushing things on a touch screen or like, you know, it's a bit detached from it. But at least the guys at Wollunga, they've got some awesome gear, but they know every inch of it, and it's hands-on at every stage, you know. Anything you need, they'll run across the room, grab it, hook a hose to it, and boom, it's away. So, yeah. And the beer's absolutely top-notch there, so that's the important thing.
Yeah, I do love their oatmeal stout especially. That's fucking smooth. Yeah,
delish, yeah. And the Metric IPA, oh, man, that's just, you get in big trouble on that beer. It's just too easy, yeah. I think we put a pretty serious dent in a keg.
Yeah, when it first came out.
Between Jeff and you and me, yeah.
So I'm drinking right now the Beard Fiction Pale Ale. Can you tell me about this beer specifically and, like, your core range in general?
Phil's just looking at the haze at the moment. I think the keg got moved a little bit this morning. Yeah, it's all right.
Is it meant to be a bit clearer?
No, it's meant to be bright. Let me see if I can pour a bright beer.
I think the keg got wobbled. Beard Fiction is... that was probably our fourth or fifth beer, I think. Because coming from the sort of hardcore craft import background... and knowing our small volume, I really wanted to push us to styles that weren't so represented in South Australia. Like, I believe we did the first Saison in South Australia, we did the first American barley wine in South Australia, and we had steam ale as well, which is not altogether too common style. Oh, there we go, it looks a bit nicer. But this one was... was a recipe of Phil's, and I think Phil was just saying, listen, we need to have a pale ale. And I was just like, mate, as a sales guy, I was like, mate, the kegs are just going to disappear. I know everyone loves pale ale. The kegs are just going to disappear. They're going to be nothing left. And then, you know, we want to do stuff that's weird and pokey and, you know, and small.
And Phil was like, well, fuck this, I need beer to drink, and I like pale ale, so we're going to make one. And I was like, okay, let me do something weird with the branding then, at least. So,
which you did.
Eventually came up with this idea that American pale ale is like Mills and Boone romance novels for boys. I don't know why. It was late at night. This one's been an ever-evolving kind of thing, and we actually probably did about 5 or 6 iterations of it, resting quite heavily on, I think it was Mochu Eka. I can't remember, but we couldn't get a hop, and we subbed in
Citra
three others.
Citra was in originally.
That's right, and Citra became unavailable almost immediately.
Yeah.
But we subbed a few in. I think we had one point where we couldn't get one of our malts and we couldn't get one of our hops, so we did all the substitution and we were like, man, is this even going to be the same beer? But it just so happened that what came out of the tank was, we thought, just spectacular compared to even the last one, which is always a nice sessionable pale, but I think this one's got a real point of difference to it. Something just clicked, and so we've kept the recipe just locked down since then, which is the nice thing about having a small setup. You really can sort of afford to tool around with it a bit because you don't need an awful lot of customers to go through your batch. So you can afford to have only customers who are actually interested in evolution of things and can take something a bit different each time and aren't obsessed with that same thing every time.
Yeah, and the small batch means that you can make, you know, incremental changes without costing too much.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. I mean, if we were to screw it up completely and had to throw it away, which really it's not going to happen on the recipe side if you know what you're doing. It wouldn't cost us all that much. We've had a couple, you know, early on where things went pear-shaped due to an infection or a bit of gear that we didn't know was malfunctioning.
Have you had to dump anything yet?
Yeah.
It's a painful process.
Yeah, it is. It is, because you have to apply to the ATO before you're allowed to throw it down the drain.
All right.
Because the excise needs to be written off.
Yeah.
And so you can't even go ahead, dump it, and then put more beer in that tank. You have to leave the poor dead beer sitting there, like a corpse of granddad sitting there in the cool room. And every time we walk past it, you just want to cry. It's just like, there's that fucking dead beer. And we can't even use that fermenter. So fortunately, ATO didn't take too long to get back to us. But yeah, still, that's, you know, at least at that scale, we're only losing maybe $400-500 instead of, you know, $4,000. So, yeah.
So you boys are pretty new in the South Australian beer scene. How do you see Adelaide and South Australia in general coming up these days in terms of craft beer?
Well, it's definitely on the move. I mean, we've been going now for a bit over 2 years, and there's meant to be an additional 6 microbreweries appearing in Adelaide, and I know that
Adelaide and surrounds.
Rural, but there's also, I know of at least 3 or 4 others in the works as well. So, it's going to be an interesting market in the next 12 months to see can the market support that many microbreweries? Is the quality of the beer going to stay to a high standard, or are some of them going to have to drop off and, you know, sell on or whatever? So
I think Adelaide's really in the middle of this kind of love affair with itself, which is quite nice. Ever since the small bars license came in about 4 years ago, very much like the Melbourne sort of style small bar license, if you've got, I think it's 100 people or less.
Yeah, same with Sydney as well.
Yeah, it's very easy to get a license, and it's really rejuvenated the nightlife in the city. And there's been this massive surge in like, Adelaide's always been fairly parochial, has a, you know, kind of a local thing, especially for wine. But that's just expanded to everything now, I think, beer, food. And Adelaide's just, we hear from that many places now that only serve local stuff, which is awesome. So while we're in the middle of this kind of bubble, I think it's nice to see all these other breweries and stuff popping up, because there's something new every other day. And it's funny that 2 years in, we're actually starting to feel like old timers in the business, because just stuff changes every week, and we've got people constantly calling us for advice. It's like, you've been around for a while. And it's like, well, 18 months maybe, mate, you know, like
maybe that's a long time in the beer industry.
But that's it, I suppose. You know, to be fair, like, I've been in the craft beer industry for much longer than that, as sales and stuff, and you've been around it as a fridgie, working in pubs and equipment side and that sort of thing. So I think we've been in a good spot to see how it's grown, and it's been at least, like, over the last 4 or 5 years, at least a 400% growth, if not far more than that, you know. Just
yeah, awesome.
Crazy, yeah. So yeah, we'll see what happens in the next few next couple of years. It's going to be new, that's for sure. I mean, yeah, as I was saying before, every 6 months, it just doesn't look anything like the 6 months previous. So who the hell knows what's going to happen next?
Yeah, it's exciting times.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, if you haven't got all your money in it, yeah. It's still exciting, also terrifying. But no, it's good. Sometimes, some weeks, I feel like I can't believe how lucky we are. And other weeks, depending on how hard you've had to work, you just wake up and go, oh, dear God, how did we get into this? Because there's a lot to do, yeah.
So are you both doing this full-time now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus.
And then some, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have any employees or anything like that, so it's just still Ryan and I really running the show with assistance from a couple of other people and partners and et cetera.
Our wives help out when they can.
Yeah. And but, yeah, I don't know. I think on the last count we're doing probably 50, 60 hours a week. So
something like that.
It takes its toll.
Yeah,
and especially when you have to deal with children as well.
You go home, have dinner and say goodnight to the kid and then go, right, jump on the computer and do some work until bedtime and then get up and do it all again. But, you know, for some reason, though, it's, I don't know, if it's what you love and it's your own thing and you're passionate about it, you can maintain your energy. It's the bloody children that bloody sap it from you, I think, because they don't let you sleep.
They're the problem.
Yeah, as long as you can sleep. Yeah, yeah. Without your little darlings coming and rousing you at 3 a.m. Yeah.
All right, guys, so thanks for joining me on the podcast. Yeah, looking forward to trying more of your beers in a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah, we're about 2 metres that way.
Yep. See you soon.
Beautiful.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Sessionable. All right, I'm here with Jade from the Wheatsheaf Hotel and Weedy Brewing Corp in South Australia. Hey, Jade.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty well. So last time I came to the Weedy, it was kind of pretty different. You started a brewery since then. You're kind of still expanding. Can you talk us through the last few years and how it's been going here?
Yeah, sure. Plenty of new toys. So it was always part of the original plan to put a brewery in the Weedy, but it was one of those things you talked about, not necessarily unlike the much talked about kitchen. It was always kind of there. Yeah, we'll put a kitchen in. One day we'll put a kitchen in. A little bit more intent behind the brewery statement, but it was still just kind of sitting there as a thing we were going to do down the track. And then about 4 or 5 years ago, came to the point where, you know, we had to make the decision whether we build a kitchen or build a brewery. And reason prevailed, and we went with the brewery option. Took a bit of convincing. My two business partners, Liz and Trotty, they, you know, obviously were keen on the brewery idea, but it was also quite clearly a, you know, somewhat of a risk. I have no formal brewing experience whatsoever. We had a very successful pub that was trundling along nicely, thank you very much, and clearly food would have worked as well. So it wasn't, you know, wasn't without some risk, but clearly much more weedy and much more fun putting a brewery in than putting a kitchen in. You know, in-source the beer and outsource the food was always, you know, our approach. So once we sort of made that decision, then it was a good couple of years planning. On our behalf, there was, you know, a lot of work to be done. The council obviously contributed to some of that lag time, bless their cotton socks, as did various utility companies, etc. But every brewery experiences those kinds of headaches. It just depends, you know, what kind of area you have them and how long they persist. But it was once we made the decision, then it was commitment to put the brewery in. Then obviously I had to work out what kind of size, exactly where we're going to put it, all those kind of considerations. Always really liked the idea of a brew pub. So rather than going down the production brewery route or one that was kind of split, always really liked the idea of just producing enough beer to serve in-house and effectively small batch, high turnover. Again, keep things fresh, keep it turning over, being able to play with different beers, different styles, collaborate with different brewers and have freedom and flexibility that we wouldn't necessarily have if we're committed to large batches and we wouldn't have if we were committed to supplying a core range of beers to other customers outside the pub. So flexibility and freedom, big part of, you know, what drove the decision for us to put in a relatively small system, 600 litre, 3 single batch fermenters initially. So smallish, but, you know, big enough to play. In retrospect, of course, I would have loved a 1,000 litre system. It's never big enough. And we've just put in a double batch fermenter for that purpose and can fit another one and possibly another one after that. But again, you know, that's something that, you know, is easily said in retrospect. But it does enable us to play. So in a sense, it was walking the walk. It's a lot of fun sourcing everyone else's beers, and we've had a lot of fun doing that over the last 14 years. But for me, the end game was to actually make our own. So I got plenty of dubious beer theories and things I've been thinking about for many, many years, literally tried thousands of beers, and lots of stuff we wanted to play with. And effectively to be, you know, masters of our own destiny, so to speak. So instead of having to rely on a particular importer sending kegs our way, or brewers brewing certain styles and then sending us some kegs, we can just give it a crack ourselves. So, you know, again, we have the ability to, you know, to come up with an idea, have a chat, develop a recipe, brew it tomorrow, drink it in 3 weeks. And that kind of freedom and flexibility is something that a lot of brewers would kill for. Mm. And we combined that with a fair selection of other people's taps as well. So we've maintained the guest tap, so to speak, with the weedy tap. So we can also be responsive to that. So if we happen to have a lot of double IPAs and Russian Imperial Stouts on tap, we can brew kettle sours and saisons and Berliner Weiss. If the reverse is the case, we can, you know, if there aren't any hops on tap, we can brew some hoppy beers. So we can just really do whatever we want. Which is a wonderful thing and very much an extension of the Weedy Way.
And like anchovy beers and stuff like that.
Well, of course, I think that's reason enough to build a brewery is to start brewing beers with anchovy in them. A whole series, in fact. And again, you know, on paper, some of our beers look quite ridiculous, and that was never necessarily the intention. So, you know, we've got, I think we've brewed about 132 batches and over 76 different beers in those 132 wow. batches. So quite prolific in that sense and quite ridiculous. I mean, it's not a sensible way to brew. But as I said, we didn't go out to make a different beer every time or every second time we brewed. It just kind of evolved that way. And I was always keen on collaborating with, you know, all these amazing brewers that we've developed, you know, friendships with over the years, yes. pouring their beers and hosting them for tastings and so on. And it's pretty hard to knock back a collaboration with phenomenal brewers. Yeah, so, of course, you're going to drop it and say, drop what, you know, our schedule, say, yep, no worries, let's do this. And what are we going to brew? Let's do something neither of us have done before and is, you know, on paper quite ridiculous. Give it a crack, you know. And the collaborating brewers are really happy to play, particularly on someone else's kit.
Yep.
we do the work, take the risk, and if it doesn't work, they can blame us. But obviously, you know, the opportunity to learn from those brewers is phenomenal. So, you know, in the last 2.5 years, I've had an education worth its weight in gold.
Yeah.
You know, any brewer now who comes here, pick their brains and ask them how they do certain things, why they do it that way. You know, hopefully they get a bit out of it as well, have a bit of fun, get to play with ingredients or methods that they haven't necessarily had the opportunity to do on their own kit, or at the very least, you know, get to throw some hops in the kettle, or anchovies for that matter.
Yeah.
So, but you do have a core range, so to speak, sort of.
Yeah. A very loosely termed core range. We probably, you know, core as in C-O-R-P-S, have about a dozen beers that we'll brew regularly.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of both. You know, again, we didn't set out to brew something that was going to become a core IPA or a core stout. We brew it if we like it and we think it came out well, or, you know, it needs a bit of fine-tuning, come out better, the punters like it, then we'll brew it again. If we think, yeah, that was an interesting exercise, but we don't need to do it again, then we won't. So there wasn't, you know, we don't say, right, this is going to be our core Pilsner, for instance. It is a feedback thing. About a dozen, and then those beers that we brew regularly, so most of those tend to be also cheesy puns, which, you know, certainly aids their cause for becoming core beers. So something like Core Promise and Non-Core Promise, Core Blimey. We have a Core Blimey as well, and then, you know, Blood Oats and a few other bits and pieces. So they're the beers. Sir Bob Gelpopf. Which was a collaboration with Mountain Goat Dave, and we'd collaborated with Goat Dave and Moo Brew for our first ever collaboration, which was Schwarzhop, so Black Hop, which was a black pils. And then it obviously, if it was going to be golden, it had to be a gold hop, and if it's gelb hop, then it's Bob. It's drawing a very long bow, but we kind of got there in the end. Yeah, exactly right. Now it's just known as Sir Bob, and people just ask for Sir Bob or Bob if they're being familiar. Bob's brewed quite regularly. We also brew for events or groups that we are involved with. So, for instance, the Roller Derby, Adelaide Roller Derby League. We sponsor the league, the pub sponsors the league. So once a year we'll brew a beer for their grand final bash. So Booty Blocker Brown is something that we brew for the ladies. And Rink Rash Red is also something that, you know, we've churned out on their behalf. And the Derby girls come and brew with us. It's good fun. We'll throw a karma keg, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's that's something we brew every year. The Rec Link Cup. So that's a national organisation which raises funds for disadvantaged people, particularly looking at arts and sports programs. So it's just a really Choir of Hard Knocks, all that kind of gear. You know, that was their project.
Is that a Aussie Rules type thing?
The event that we're involved with is, yeah. They do lots of different things, but yeah, it's a game of footy about which I know nothing, but we brew a beer for it, which is far more appropriate. Inkslinger Stout, we support the journos, so Inkslinger Stout once a year. So there are a few, you know, we collaborate with a climbing club that we also sponsor. So it's nice to be able to do those, you know, brews for community groups, so to speak. And if anyone, you know, pitches a really good idea to us, we're, you know, happy to consider it as well, and work it into the schedule. So it's, you know, a combination of brewing for particular groups that we support, brewing with visiting brewers, coaxing brewers to come and brew with us, popping the question, and then obviously just playing, you know. So we get, as I'm fond of saying, the freedom of contract, but with the stability of Stainless. We know we've got our own tanks, we know what the schedule is, we can manipulate that schedule as required. So effectively it's the best of both worlds.
And I guess it kind of keeps things interesting when you collaborate with so many people as well.
Absolutely, yeah, and always different perspectives, always fresh ideas, and I'm always brewing with far more experienced brewers than myself, so that's excellent from my perspective, perhaps a little frustrating from theirs, but amazing stuff. I mentioned about 6 weeks ago we've collaborated with Vine Stefano Braumeister Tobias Solo, which was extraordinary. I mean, it wasn't even on the bucket list because I didn't even think it was remotely possible, and popped the question. Dan, our distributor, was fantastic, and he was really keen on the idea as well, so he sort of pushed at his end, and Tobias thoroughly expected him to say, look, too busy, you've got all these commitments, not going to happen. To his credit, he just said, yeah, sure, if I can fit it in, and then it didn't end up happening, and then last minute it did. So we had 2 weeks to sort of throw something together, but amazing experience. And he was phenomenal technical brewer, and a good sport, you know, genuinely really interested in quite a different, much more simple system, much more basic system than his, but you know, on the flip side, he just fell in love with Enigma hops. He hadn't had good, fresh Enigma flowers before. So once we got him in the brewery, you know, he for most of the day, he just had his face in hands full of Enigma flowers. And that was fantastic. So it was kind of nice to be able to, you know, give something back. Because otherwise, obviously, that, you know, it's pretty one-sided, that collaboration. But great fun. So we brewed a Volpedinger Dunkel. Dunkel, but hopped with the Australian hops, Enigma, predominantly Enigma, and some of the New World Germans, so Hallertau Blanc and Quellmalon. So sort of New World hops on a fairly traditional Dunkel base, and we used a blend of White Labs German lager yeasts for it as well, and it's come out really well. We were under instructions to lager it for at least 4 to 6 weeks at 2 degrees, which is exactly what we've done. So we'll launch that second Sunday in December.
So the Wheaties's been around for a long time now, and it's kind of been a mainstay in Adelaide craft beer. But Adelaide brewers and craft beer bars have been kind of popping up in the last few years. How do you see the scene these days compared to when you first started?
Completely different. So when we first started, there was pretty much nutter going on. It was, in terms of craft, in terms of focus on craft, we were really the only ones who were involved with that nationally. I mean, there wasn't a lot going on nationally, so each state probably had one, maybe two venues who were doing something 14 years ago, and quite possibly those venue was a brewery itself. So there wasn't much going on, period. Certainly not much going on in Adelaide, and I often mention this, but I think there was Coopers everywhere, and that's a good and a bad thing. I think it's a double-edged sword. The good thing was there was Coopers everywhere. So you could go into any pub and get a Cooper Stout or a Sparkling. You could drink an ale, you could drink something bottle conditioned, you could drink something you couldn't see through. And South Australians absolutely used to that, and, you know, quite parochially, you know, dedicated to that. The flip side was that because you could get Coopers everywhere, there wasn't the same need to brew better beer and to source better beer. If you're faced with a wall of generic lager, no wonder everyone interstate said, shit, we've got to start brewing some decent stuff because there's nothing worth drinking here. We never had it as bad in SA, which I think goes some way to explain why it took a bit longer for the general scene to be as enthusiastic about craft beer as the rest of the country. But certainly the last sort of 3 or 4 years, it's really picked up. Early days, we were dragging people kicking and screaming into craft beer. You'd literally, someone come to the bar, they'd say, I want a pale ale, and you'd say, which one? And they'd look at you as if, you know, you'd blasphemed. It's like, there's only one pale ale, of course, meaning Cooper's. Yeah. And it took a long time to get people to come around to the idea. There were lots of different pales, and arguably Cooper's pale wasn't and isn't the pale. Anyway, yada, yada, yada. And then it was probably took about 4 or 5 years, I reckon, and then people, their understanding of beer had improved. They'd travelled, they'd tasted, they'd read, and they started to expect more from their beer. And so our job became easier rather than having to convert. It felt early days like converting every single customer every time. Yeah. And then after about 4 or 5 years, it kind of reached, you know, tipping point, and then it started to generate, craft beer started to generate a bit of energy of its own nationally. And then the last 4 or 5 years, Adelaide, particularly the last two, I think there's been a little mini explosion, which has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
And I think it's great. It's about time that everyone else has kind of, you know, cottoned on to the whole good quality beer thing. Yeah. There aren't too many places that are really taking it on. I mean, there are some new breweries and little breweries who are giving it a really good crack. In terms of venues, it's been fairly conservative, I think, and there are a lot of venues that will hedge their bets. You know, yeah. And yes, they'll do some crafty things and get some really good beer in, but they'll just keep their whatever it is, Cooper's Pale or Carlton, yeah, Draft or VB Tap, because they're too scared to get rid of that, or they believe that, you know, you need that on tap, you know, to pay the bills, which obviously is rubbish. But there is that conservatism. And interestingly, there are a couple of very conservative pokey pubs who are now sort of embracing craft, which as a punter is good, because you can get good beer lots of places. Little concern, I mean, as with anywhere, you're getting people jumping on the bandwagon as well, and they're not necessarily doing it because that's what they want to do. They're seeing, yeah, it as a business opportunity, therefore they're not doing it that well. And as soon as the next big thing comes along, they'll jump on that bandwagon as well. But overall, I think this is what we wanted. We wanted more good beer to be readily available, and the general quality of beer to be raised, and that's certainly been the case. You know, and it's good for us as well. You know, it keeps us, you know, on our toes. For a long time, no one else is doing anything. You know, now there are people who are, you know, doing tastings, doing tap takeovers, doing all this kind of stuff.
And you kind of like, yeah, the same kegs. You kind of like see Pirate Life every second pub now.
Yeah.
In the fridge, which is really weird.
It is, but yeah, but it's good. I mean, yeah, you know, it's good that you can go into, you know, really mainstream pubs that, you know, even 4 years ago you'd really struggle to find something decent beer-wise to drink. You can now go, oh, actually, I could two or three things that I'm pretty keen to drink, and you know, so that is a good thing. For us, you know, that it wasn't why we put the brewery in, but it's certainly an added benefit of having it. Is, you know, you can only get our beer here, but also we're not beholden to anyone or anything else. We can just do what we want. So, you know, we don't have to fight over that one keg of Founders Ridiculous or whatever it is. If we don't get it, we'd actually, you know, it's great to get it. But if we don't get it, that's okay too, because we're doing our own thing.
And, like, you don't have to worry about selling your own beers anywhere else, because you there's the beer you want to brew and you want to sell, so that's fine, right?
Exactly. And totally do it. It's completely self-indulgent. Just do what we want to do. And as long as we do it well enough, obviously the beer has to be good enough, and our punters will let us know if it's not. And that's, you know, that was a little scary. It keeps us honest, because we've spent years introducing people to excellent beer and plying people with excellent beer, so they expect excellent beer. And then if we put a brewery in and, you know, we're not there or thereabouts, it's going to be problematic. Obviously, there was a bit of a honeymoon period, you know, I've still got a lot to learn as a brewer. But, you know, the expectation was there that it has to be solid, otherwise, you know, it's all over. So, you know, it keeps us on our toes in that respect as well. So, yeah, it's great to have punters with educated palates.
Yeah.
But it also means that they can identify faults in your beer when you brew it. So it's great. You know, it keeps you honest, you know, and keeps you critical, hypercritical of your own beer.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a good thing. I think that's quite healthy, much as you hate to admit it. You know, so that is a good thing.
Cool. So thanks for your time chatting to us. Looking forward to trying more of your beers in the near future. very near future.
We send a few kegs out and about every now and then. So we have sent a couple of kegs to Sydney for Sydney Beer Week.
Yeah, we had a happy place at one point a couple of years ago. That was awesome.
Aaron's collaboration. The most recent Sydney Good Beer Week, the Flodge, we sent some kegs there because they had a poo essay, so the Pine of Origin essay. So we sent a non-core, a weedy mix, and a kettle sour saison, which seemed to go reasonably well. The Good Beer Week in Melbourne, whatever the Pine of Origin venue is there, it's been the Palace the last couple of years, we'll send some kegs there for that. Carlin Cellars have had a few kegs. I think every state except WA has had some of our kegs. Hobart Brewing Co. we collaborated with earlier in the year.
Yep.
They're good mates of ours, and we brewed down there with them, and then they sent a pallet of kegs to us, and we sent our first pallet to Tassie, which was a beautiful thing. So it was nine kegs, nine different beers, and it represented an entire batch for us, which was, you know, was quite scary.
Yeah.
But that was awesome to have it down there, and it was poured over Dark Mofo, which was fantastic.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I really want to go to Dark Mofo.
Well, hopefully we'll do the same thing next year, because then it gives us an excuse to go down there as well. And weedy beers and Dark Mofo, you know, warms the cockles of my heart. So, yeah, have the ability to do that is excellent. And we're going to get out and about a bit more too, so we have a beer truck on the way, which should be completed in the next sort of 4 to 6 months. And then we'll start getting a little bit mobile. But control is a big thing, so being able to control the quality of our beer, as I mentioned earlier, cold chain the whole way. So we'll pre-chill the kegs, fill them, 2 to 4 degree cold room downstairs, poured, they're done, they never see the light of day, and that has a lot to do with the freshness of the beers, obviously, and the quality of the beers, and not having to stress about sending them elsewhere, and you know, we both know how beers can be handled in transit and stored and venues and all that kind of gear, and that would terrify me, sending our beers out into the big wide world, unless it's a venue that we know is going to look after it and it's going to be shipped cold and all that kind of gear. So maintaining that control is a big part of it. And if we're not happy with something, we just take it off.
It's a bit of a pet peeve of mine as well.
Yeah.
Especially with hoppy beers.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's one of the next kind of frontiers. And obviously there are a handful of Australian breweries, particularly those hop-forward breweries, hop-obsessed breweries, who insist on refrigerated transport and storage, and that's a really good thing. But there are still plenty who don't, and you're going to run into some difficulties, I reckon. And those venues who don't store and pour their beer correctly, because there are now so many breweries, so many beers, and it's those little differences that are going to start to, you know, become big differences, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and the more that punters know about what they're drinking, then, you know, they'll bring that to the fore as well.
Cool. All right. I guess we'll wrap it up there. But thanks, yeah.
Absolute Cheers. Pleasure. See you next time here at the Week.
See you next time.
Sessionable.
Okay, that's it for today. Once again, thanks to Dave's Brewery Tours for sponsoring us. Join us in a couple of weeks for our annual Christmas Spectacular, where we will drink many, many beers and get really drunk, and it'll be funny. And, yeah, see ya.